This is Barbara Ridenour returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 22, 2016. We'll continue with the obituaries. Richard Anthony Carr III, 52, of Dalton City, died Wednesday, July 20, 2016. Private family memorial service will be held at a later date. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, is assisting the family with arrangements. Memorials may be made to the family. Nathan P. Sprague, 31, of Clinton, died July 19, 2016. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 23, at the Clinton United Methodist Church. Burial will follow in Mausoleum Park Cemetery, Clinton. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 11 a.m. at the church. Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to his children, Caleb and Dylan, Dylan's education fund. Let's turn now to the opinion page and continue with letters to the editor. Many differences between Germany and America. In 1933, Germany suffered economic depression and social unrest from the results of the World War I and the Treaty of Versailles. Inflation, unemployment, and political extremism were rampant, and the people were looking for a strong leader to make Germany great again. Enter Adolf Hitler. He fed on the frustration and prejudices of the people. After he was appointed chancellor, he moved quickly to consolidate his power. He managed to pass two pieces of legislation. The Reichstag fire decree nullified many key civil liberties and suppressed freedom of the press. Worse, however, was the Enabling Act of 1933, which gave Hitler power to enact laws without the consent of the democratically elected legislature. Jews were required to register in a national registry and forced to wear the Star of David. Are we in danger of heading in a similar direction in this country? What was it Mr. Trump wanted U.S. Muslims to do? And didn't Mr. Trump also ban certain news outlets from attending his rallies? Isn't his campaign slogan, "Make America Great Again"? Do I believe Mr. Trump could do for America what Herr Hitler did for Germany? This is not Germany. Unlike Germany in the 1930s, we have a much more diverse population who love America and can be smart about who we elect to be our president. You may not like the alternative, but can you really vote for a man who has to tell you how humble he is? Leslie Stahl knows. He just told her on CBS 60 Minutes, "I don't believe this could happen here, but don't we just want a strong leader to make America great again?" Signed, Walt Wessel, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to Unity, a Unity event held a week ago at Hess Park that brought young people from across the country to Decatur together. The event, organized by Reverend Courtney Carson, Elijah Buck, and Rico Blaylock, featured full-court basketball games, grilled hot dogs and chips, and upbeat socializing. Carson said it shows the power of people getting together, praying and talking about issues. There's individuals out there who tried to kill each other, and they're united, he said. Thumbs up to the annual Relay for Life event held last week on the Richland Community College campus. The event, which is a fundraiser and awareness raiser for the American Cancer Society, features teams of walkers throughout the night. The experience is meant to stimulate the struggle cancer victims undertake, from the energy in the evening to the struggle through the late hours to the sunrise in the morning. The goal for the event was to raise $218,000. Thumbs up to another successful Gus Macker basketball tournament held in downtown Decatur last week. The event, which features three-on-three teams facing off in all levels of competition, is part tournament and part street festival and a lot of fun. Attendance and participation was down a bit this year, but we hope the event thrives in the future. Thumbs up to the opening of the Scoville Sculpture Park, which was held Saturday. The new park, which is located between the Children's Museum of Illinois and Scoville Zoo, will feature a lot of sculptures, some of which will change on a regular basis. The Decatur Parks Foundation is overseeing the project with a $250,000 grant from the Howard Buffett Foundation and cooperation with the Children's Museum, Decatur Park District, Decatur Arts Council, and Newhoff Media. Thumbs up to the creation of a Decatur Public Schools Hall of Fame, with the first class to be honored this fall at the Eisenhower-MacArthur football game. The Decatur Tribune's Tom McNamara has been working on the Hall of Fame for some time, and it will include notable athletes from Eisenhower, MacArthur, Decatur, Stephen Decatur, and Lakeview High Schools. In a cool feature, both Eisenhower and MacArthur High Schools will have touch screens so students can learn about the athletic greats of the past. Thumbs up to the hordes of Pokemon Go players that are actually walking outside and visiting sites in order to play the insanely popular digital game. Those who have complained that game players don't get outside enough can't voice that complaint any longer. However, a few players have been less smart by chasing the digital creatures in inappropriate places such as the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. Players should remember that respect for sacred places and private property is part of responsible game playing. On the Life page, 149-year-old church to be taken down. Oakley Brick will incorporate historic items into new building. It was a painful decision for the congregation of the Oakley Brick Church of the Brethren, but they have decided the work of their 149-year-old church is finally done. Many knew in their hearts that this was probably the case after straight-line winds lifted the roof from the walls December 23rd and dropped it inside the building, thereafter exposing the historic structure to the elements. There is no way to cover it without compromising someone's safety, said Greg Morgenthaler, a longtime member who lives near the church. It took until spring to get a final settlement from the insurance company. Steve's Trucking of Decatur is set to begin demolition any day on what's left of the church and an aging parsonage that hasn't been used for many years. A building committee has also been formed in hopes of getting the shell of a new building of a new church up before winter. The Reverend David Rowe, the church's pastor, said members are in good spirits, having moved Sunday services to a vacant church building at the corner of Durfee and Monroe Streets earlier this year from Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home elsewhere in Cerro Gordo. We have unrestricted access to the building and all the room we need, Rowe said. We're probably going to have some debate as we look at new building plans, but God is going to lead us where we need to go. Church members were able to salvage several items from the front of the sanctuary later in the day, December 23rd, including hymnals, the pulpit, and a copy of Christ in Gethsemane by German painter Heinrich Hoffmann. Rose said those items, plus as many bricks from the walls can be salvaged during demolition, are to be incorporated into the new church building. There is a flavor to the church, and we want that to continue. The congregation faced a similar challenge in 1982 when a tornado ripped away nearly half of the roof. Members met in the church basement until the damage was repaired. Morgenthaler, who is a member of the church board and chairman of the stewardship committee, said no one wanted to lose the old brick church, but saving it at this point would be cost prohibitive. We're not sure the walls are structurally sound. There's a lot of mold issues, he said. This isn't something we wanted to see happen, but at the end of the day, it's just a building. A good building that's done its job. God expects you to pick up the pieces and move on, and that's what we're going to do. Dear Abby, family resents boyfriend for usurping dad's chair. Dear Abby, my beloved father passed away 3 years ago. One of my older sisters moved in with Mom to help take care of her and her companion, and be her companion. My sister has a boyfriend my father absolutely disliked, and the rest of our family doesn't like him either. My issue, and I'm not the only one family member who feels this way, is that when her boyfriend is at the house, he sits in Dad's chair. It's hard enough not seeing Dad there anywhere, but seeing the boyfriend sitting there is offensive. Am I wrong for feeling this way? Is there if there is a way, how could I or my family approach the subject with my sister or her boyfriend? Signed, Daddy's Gone Now. Dear Daddy's Gone Now, please accept my sympathy for the loss of your obviously much-loved father. But the boyfriend may be using Dad's chair because no one else is using it, and it is comfortable and available. As I see it, you and your other siblings have two choices. Either speak to the boyfriend and tell him nicely that seeing him occupy your father's special chair is painful for all of you, or replace the chair with one that has less sentimental value. Escalator safety. Dear Abby, some time ago I was descending an escalator when a suitcase belonging to the woman ahead of me got stuck. She had put the bag in front of her and the wheels got caught on one of the steps. When she reached the bottom of the escalator, she fell over her suitcase, then I fell over her. I scrambled on my hands and knees as fast as I could to get out of the way of the dozens of people behind us, visualizing a pileup of injuries. Fortunately, attendant quickly grabbed the suitcase and no one was hurt. As he did, he said, "Never put a suitcase ahead of you on an escalator. Always carry it behind you so you can control it. I hope this letter will save others from what could be a dangerous situation." Signed, Avoided a Pileup in New Jersey. Dear Avoided, so do I. Thank you for the warning. Reasonable request. Dear Abby, recently my wife was out for some training all day on Saturday. Our 11-year-old daughter had been invited to a birthday party on the same day, so I was to drop her off. My wife and daughter told me the party might or might not be a sleepover party. My daughter would inform me at the end of the party if she were spending the night. I wanted to know at the time I dropped her off whether she was going to be sleeping over. My wife claimed I didn't need to know. She accused me of being unreasonable and said it was okay for me to find out at the end of the party. I don't mean to be picky, but as a dad, was I being unreasonable? Signed, Responsible Parent in Oregon. Dear parent, no. As the parent responsible for your daughter that day, you had every right to know what plans would be so you could plan your own evening. When the invitation was issued, that information should have been conveyed so your daughter would be prepared to take when the invitation was issued, that information should have been conveyed so your daughter would be prepared. Take along her pajamas and toothbrush. Keep safe while traveling. As lots of families leave for vacation, the last thing they want to deal with is illness or an injury. But being in crowded airports, out at night when the bugs come out, or on the road has a few significant health risks. Here are some tips on how to make the trip as safe as possible. Be careful around water. For local travel, the number one risk really is injuries, said Ari Gilmore, a physician in family medicine at Pacific Medical Center, Beacon Hill. Water is a huge risk, and parents and kids need to be mindful of making sure kids always wear a life vest, as well as being cautious around cold, fast currents. In some spots, kids can get swept away, even if they're just up to their knees in water, Gilmore noted. Beware of skeeters and ticks. It's a good idea to ward off mosquitoes with a little bug spray, and long sleeves and pants when possible. Mosquitoes are always a risk, said Gilmore, who emphasized that scratching the bites and getting an infection can be a problem, too. He recommended having Benadryl or hydrocortisone lotion on hand in order to deal with itchy bites if the mosquitoes do get you or your child. To prevent that, he recommends using DEET, as long as you are careful. Don't spray it in the air near a child who could end up inhaling it. Instead, use a lotion. Zika is not currently considered a risk for children. Use sunscreen. Apply and reapply a good UVB and UVA blocking sunblock frequently with littler kids age 6 and younger. Try to minimize sun exposure altogether during peak sun hours, usually 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The risks of too much sun include bad sunburns, sunstroke, and possible future skin cancers. Rash guard, swimsuits, swim shirts, hats, and 100% UV-blocking sunglasses offer additional protection from intense sun. Get vaccinated. One of the nice things about this standard U.S. vaccine schedule is that kids are usually pretty well prepared for most places, said Gilmore, noting that hepatitis A and pertussis are fairly prevalent in some other countries. Children vaccinated according to the standard U.S. pediatric schedule will already be well protected from these potentially serious illnesses, said Gilmore. Keep hands clean. Not washing your hands is one of the top dangers at the airport, a place full of travelers in which there's very high chance of picking up a contagious illness. At restaurants, Gilmore recommends using the bathroom early on to make sure there's plenty of warm water and soap available in the restroom. Buckle up. If you're in another country, it's possible you'll be in a vehicle with substandard seat belt protection. Vacation Bible School, Cisco Methodist Church, 6 to 8:15 p.m. Monday to Wednesday, July 25th to 27th, Cisco United Methodist Church. Theme is Cave Quest, Following Jesus, the Light of the World. Open to ages 3 to early teens. Call 217-669-2446. That's 669-2446. Dalton City United Methodist, 6 to 8:30 p.m. Monday to Thursday, July 25th to 28th, Dalton City United Methodist Church, 200 East Freeland Street, open to all children and youth, 6 p.m. dinner. St. John United Church of Christ, Lincoln, 5:30 to 8 p.m. Tuesday to Thursday, July 26th to 28th, St. John United Church of Christ, Lincoln. Theme is Serving Others, open to all ages. Includes kid-friendly meal. It's 217-732-6957. That's 732-6957. And in briefs, new pastor leads churches. The Reverend Stephen Arisman is the new pastor as of July 1st at Our Lady of the Holy Spirit Catholic Church Mount Zion and St. Isidore Catholic Church Bethany. New Mass times at St. Isidore will be at 10:30 a.m. Sunday and 8:30 a.m. Tuesday. New Mass times at Our Lady of the Holy Spirit will be at 8:30 a.m. Sunday, Monday, and Thursday and 5:30 p.m. Wednesday. For information, call 217-864-3467. That's 864-3467. A fish fry will be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, July 23rd, in Antioch Christian Academy, 3775 North Maple Avenue, Decatur. Cost is $10. Call 217-520-0944. That's 520-0944. In state news, Gill, short of valid signatures to be on ballot. Springfield, an attorney for David Gill, said the Bloomington physician plans to move forward with a lawsuit challenging the number of signatures an independent congressional candidate must collect to get back on the ballot in Illinois. An initial Illinois State Board of Elections review this week determined that Gill's supporters only collected 8,593 valid signatures out of the more than 10,000 he needed to earn a spot on the November 8th ballot in the 13th Congressional District. Gill, a former four-time Democratic candidate, is seeking to run against U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican of Taylorville, and Democratic challenger Mark Wicklund of Decatur. Gill lost to Davis in his last congressional bid in 2012. The review came after Wicklund and former Macon County Republican Party Chairman Jerry Stocks questioned the validity of some of the petition signatures the Gill campaign collected. Sam Conman, a Springfield attorney representing Gill, said that he doesn't plan to challenge the finding by staff of the Elections Board, but will instead take the fight to court. Conman said that the number of signatures required for an independent congressional candidate in Illinois is nearly 15 times the number required for majority party candidates. Davis and Wicklund, for example, each had to gather fewer than 740 signatures. Unfortunately, the Illinois State Board of Elections is about to knock Dr. Gill off the ballot, in spite of his overwhelming show of support for him by the voters of the 13th Congressional District through their petition signatures, and certainly far greater than what was shown by either of the two other candidates, Kahneman said in an emailed statement. Dr. Gill views the current signature requirements as patently absurd, egregious, and clearly unconstitutional. Kahneman added in an interview that he hasn't found another state with such an excessive signature requirement. Independent U.S. Senate candidates in Illinois are required to collect 25,000 petition signatures, only five times the number required for majority party candidates. And they don't have to worry about making sure the people signing live in the correct congressional district, Kahneman said. John Fogarty Jr., an attorney for Stocks, did not respond Thursday to a request for comment. Wicklund set aside his challenge to allow the elections board to proceed with Stocks, which involved more signatures and raised other issues as well. Ken Menzel, the board's general counsel, said it's fairly common for independent candidates to sue the state over signature requirements. The timeline for doing so is tight because the board must certify the ballot by August 26th, Menzel said. Also in state news, Deere continues layoffs with 120 at East Moline plant, Moline, Illinois. Deere and Company says it's laying off 120 employees at an East Moline factory as part of ongoing job cuts. The company said in a news release Friday that the production employees are being indefinitely laid off as the company tries to adjust to anticipate decreases in sales of agricultural equipment this year. Deere spokesman Ken Goldman said the East Moline plant makes combines and other harvesting equipment. Golden said the East Moline-based company has laid off about 2,000 employees as it deals with expected decreases in the sales of agricultural equipment this year. In entertainment, for the Little Theater, final musical of season is Sister Act. Sullivan. For his last musical of the summer season, Little Theater on the Square wanted to give the audience a big show. This is the biggest cast of the season, assistant choreographer Lexi Dorsett-Sharp said of Sister Act. It has more harmonies, more production numbers, and more choreography. The musical Sister Act will be performed July 27th through August 7th at the Little Theater. According to director Christy Kerr, the musical is not only a high-energy family show, it is also a story of love and self-discovery. There is a heart that is the story, she said, finding yourself and finding your love. The story is about a lounge singer named Dolores Van Cartier, who witnesses a murder and must go into the witness protection program in a convent. Pretending to be a nun, she teaches the other nuns to sing and dance. In the process, the two groups find a mutual admiration and dependency. The story uses original music reminiscent to the generation. Disco was popular in nightclubs at the time. That's the style Dolores brings to the convent. There is dancing throughout, a lot of Motown and disco, Dorsett Sharp said. If you are going to think you know the music, but it just sounds like that era, said Ann Borders, actress. Kahaja Raleigh, who plays Dolores, said the main character is humorous, but brings more emotions to the story. Both groups learn from each other, she said, and she falls in love with the nuns. One of the characters challenging Dolores the most is Mother Superior, played by Borders. But they mutually bring out the best in each other, Dorsett Sharp said. Borders, a Millikan University adjunct professor, is one of the many favorites returning to Little Theater for the final musical. She said the relationship between the two characters has a modern theme, comparing it with the country's current situations. It is accidentally, tragically topical, she said. Border sees Mother Superior as an unconscious racist. The story takes place in the 1970s with an older authority figure shut out from the rest of the world for over 20 years. We have a lot of good folks who have never had a black friend, Borders said. They don't have any animosity, but they carry around this prejudice or preconceived ideas without any evil intent. Borders compares Mother Superior to many in the Midwest, a very nice, good Christian person who is devoting their life to doing good in the world, she said. Also in state news, Rauner once called Chicago teachers virtually illiterate. Chicago, Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner was forced to issue an apology Thursday for contending in an email sent in 2011 that half of Chicago public school teachers are virtually illiterate and half of its principals are incompetent. Rauner's assertion was revealed Thursday in email Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel's administration released under a court order. At the time, Rauner, who was elected in 2014, was a private equity executive and a large donor to the Chicago Public Education Fund, an education reform group. He was discussing future investments by the fund with other billionaire board members, including hedge fund manager Ken Griffith, Ariel Investments President Melody Hobson, businesswoman and current U.S. Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker, and Helen Zell, whose husband's lucrative real estate dealings funded her family foundation. In discussing reform in his December 11, 2011 email, Rauner said teacher evaluation is critically important, but in a massive bureaucracy where 50% of principals are managerially incompetent and half of teachers are virtually illiterate, a complex, multidimensional evaluation system with huge subjectivity in it will be attacked, manipulated, and marginalized. The status quo will prevail. Rauner spokesman Lance Trover released a statement Thursday saying the email was sent out of frustration at the pace of change in the public school system. The governor regrets writing it and apologizes to CPS educators for making an unfair, untrue comment, the statement said, adding that the email was written prior to being governor. Chicago Teachers Union Vice President Jesse Sharkey did not immediately return a telephone call seeking comment on the Rauner email. The Chicago Tribune sought the emails in connection with its reporting about a CPS principal training program at the center of former district superintendent Barbara Bird Bennett's federal fraud conviction last year. Emanuel previously either redacted some of the message or withheld them entirely. The Tribune sued, and this week Cook County Circuit Judge Anna Demacopoulos ruled that the mayor's office violated Illinois open records laws and ordered City Hall to turn over the emails. Rauner, a Republican, has been a frequent public critic of the teachers union and its members since sending the email. During a 2012 teacher strike, Rauner penned an opinion piece for the Tribune saying the strike provides us all with a clear opportunity to examine the grossly inadequate performances of many public school teachers and highlight and reward the great performances of other teachers. Rauner said he sat in a CPS math class and watched division being taught incorrectly and saw standardized test scores of CPS teachers that indicate many of them aren't even capable of scoring 21 on the ACT. That's all we have time for today's edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 22nd, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Have a great weekend and week to follow. Try to stay cool. I will look forward to reading with you again soon.